the early days of the internet, my guest had a thought. What if we could take the kind of information you find in an encyclopedia and put it online, but set things up so that any user could add to that information, and at the same time, make sure all that new information is verified? I'm pretty sure you've guessed the website by now. It's Wikipedia. And its founder, Jimmy Wales, has written about what he's learned along the way in a new book, The 7 Rules of Trust, why it's today's most essential superpower. Jimmy Wales, welcome.
Great. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
Why did you choose trust as the focus of this book?
Well, if you look around the world today, we really do see a crisis of trust as, you know, if you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer Survey, which is across many different countries, we've seen a long and steep decline in trust in journalism, trust in politics, trust in institutions. Meanwhile, there's a lot of lessons I've learned from Wikipedia about trust. Wikipedia is very trusting. It lets people come and edit, and it's a very open system, and we're very welcoming. And so I just thought, okay, well, look, let's see if we can share some of what I've learned, and hopefully people find it useful.
So you say Wikipedia is very trusting, and that's built into the way it's set up. It's also very trusted. Is this, Well, I know that reciprocity is one of your rules. Do you think that's where that trust has come from?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different elements. Certainly, you know, that Wikipedia is open to participation, gives people some assurance. It isn't managed top down, and you know, sometimes people who don't realize that assume you know, that the editorial content of Wikipedia is somehow approved by me or something like that, but that isn't really how it works. But you know, there are a lot of other things. The transparency is really, really important. You know, the idea that in order to give people some assurance about the content, we need to have links to our sources, and we need to show the debates and all of that.
I do want to talk about what you say are some of the ways we can restore this trust, but it feels like we can't really talk to you, Jimmy, without talking about Wikipedia, without talking about this thing that you've made. I'd love to go back to the sort of origin story of Wikipedia. There's actually a really personal story about the birth of your daughter that fed into what the site has become.
Yeah, when Kira was born, she was very ill. She had meconium aspiration syndrome. And I had been working and trying to build an encyclopedia for some time and was really on the verge of giving up. I mean, it was very hard, and it wasn't really clear how we were going to do it. And, you know, the doctor who treated Kira was fantastic. He gave me all the kinds of things I needed in order to trust him. Like, he treated me as an equal, and he explained the science to me and all of those good things. And I went and tried to research on the internet the condition. And I mean, it was terrible. There wasn't much out there. It was, you know, some of it was high quality in one sense, but it was academic journal articles, which, as a person who's not a medical specialist, it was really hard to understand. I was like, wow, you know, an encyclopedia, it really is important. We really do need this. And so I came home from the hospital, you know, sort of re-energized to say, we have to try this. And that was when I set up the wiki, which was an idea we had been playing with a little bit, and said, you know what, we have to give it one more try. We have to try this crazy idea, because the end goal seems worth it, to have a free encyclopedia for everybody in their own language. It motivated me and it excites me. And I now have this personal sort of connection to, like, how important it is to have that information you need when you need it.
Can you tell me about what the energy was around the internet at that time?
Well, it was a very exciting time. And, you know, one of the reasons Wikipedia has ended up as a charity, as a nonprofit, was really because when I was starting Wikipedia, I didn't actually have a very clear idea of what any sort of business model was. I mean, we sort of thought, okay, well, maybe we'll put ads on, or maybe we could charge money. It was just an exciting time to say, like, clearly this needs to exist. We'll just start it and we'll figure out the business model later. And so that was kind of the dot-com boom era. And, you know, it was kind of okay to just start a project and just see what you could make and then figure out the details later. But by the time, you know, it started to grow and all this, it became obvious to me, it really felt like it needed to be in a nonprofit structure. You know, we're an educational project run by volunteers. plus, it was a dot-com crash, and there was no way to raise money or to do anything else. So it all worked, and, you know, thank goodness.
I'm always amazed at the way that Wikipedia is run by volunteers, and I wonder what you've learned from the kind of people who choose that for themselves over the years.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Wikipedia volunteers tend to be very geeky, very, you know, we're a bunch of geeks and we're nerdy and we're really interested in information and knowledge. We tend to be not particularly political people. You know, it's a different personality type from like social media influencer types. You know, a lot of people in Wikipedia, there is some social component to it. Obviously, you meet other people and so forth, and you get a social reputation for doing good work in the community, but nobody's becoming famous from editing Wikipedia. You know, that's just not what we're all about.
And every couple of years, there's a story that will pop up about you being like, can you believe this guy isn't a billionaire? Like, do you feel like you maybe in retrospect could have set the site up slightly differently?
You know, I mean, the thing is, I just always say, look, and, you know, in 100-year time, people are going to look back on Wikipedia and say, you know what, there was a lot of bad stuff going on, but that was actually really good. Like, it wasn't perfect, but a lot of great people came together to give this amazing gift to the world. I'm really proud of that, and I really think that's exciting. And then also, you know, my life is so interesting. You know, I can talk to anybody in the world I want to. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we need me to speak to prime ministers or presidents or whatever, and they'll take my call. I mean, that's completely crazy. I'm just this geek. I mean, I'm literally sitting in my basement where I work, you know? and, you know, it's just great fun. And you know, so many lovely people, and it's just a wonderful thing to be a part of.
It sounds like such a beautiful, shiny thing. It's so lovely to hear yourself just describe yourself as an optimist and have retained that optimism over 2.5 decades. But I do want to kind of acknowledge the fact that public perceptions of Wikipedia have shifted so much over the years. Mm. It was a bit of a gimmick. It was then seen as sort of a source that uni. Well, this is my experience as a uni student.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
loved it, but our lecturers yeah. were like, no, it's unreliable. Then it had this sort of heyday of neutrality. Now a lot of the criticism is that it's overly woke. How do you grapple with these shifts? It's your baby.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in part there are two ways that we're responding to that. So first, you know, just putting out there to people, like, neutral point of view is still our number one core policy, and we're really, really passionate about that, and the community is very passionate about that. Number two, okay, when we get criticism, the way we've always dealt with criticism is we can't bury our head in the sand. We have to say, okay, like, what? Like, yeah, help us. Like, we want your help. How do we figure that out? Like, where are we making mistakes? What are the things we need to do? I mean, of course, we have to understand right now there's this, you know, enormous culture war going on. And on a lot of topics, people have kind of lost their minds. And so, you know, if you see an anti-vax person saying, oh, they're just putting forth mainstream propaganda, I'm just like, it's called science, actually. And, you know, we do acknowledge the you know, there are legitimate scientific questions around certain vaccines and this, that, and the other. And, you know, that's all legitimate. But broadly, we aren't going to sort of throw aside science and say, yes, but this actress thinks that vaccines are bad. Like, no, that's not how it works. And so, you know, some of that criticism, you know, I don't know what to tell people except, you know, take a deep breath, slow down a little bit, stop listening to randos on the internet and think. And in other cases, I think, okay, well, hold on. Yeah, maybe we could do better. Like, let's take a look at that.
This is personal for you, though. You didn't found Wikipedia on your own. Your co-founder, Larry Sanger, was there at the beginning with you, but more recently has criticized the current state of Wikipedia. I'm really curious to know that what that feels like to have a relationship that I imagine was originally very close, having such a public rift.
You know, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, Larry hasn't been involved for over 20 years, and he has managed to get his voice heard because certain people like Elon Musk are very keen to undermine the facts of reality. And that's unfortunate. And, you know, I think Some of Larry's criticisms are interesting. Most of them are really misinformed about how Wikipedia works. And, you know, there we are. But, you know, whatever. It's all part of the dialogue and discourse. I mean, I think what's really what I'm all about is saying, look, we need to stop taking debate so personally, right? If somebody says, oh, hey, there's a problem here, don't get defensive and say, oh, I hate you. No, just say, oh, hold on a second. Like, I think you're mistaken, or maybe you're right on this part. Like, let's work on that together.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor speaking to Jimmy Wales, Wikipedia co-founder. And thank you for your texts on this chat about basically trust and the future of the internet and society. One person says, trust, great topic. Surely it starts with our governments, but each time they increase surveillance, decrypt our electronic communications, and above all, conceal information from us, they undermine the trust that's essential for democracy. People naturally follow, soon we'll have nothing left. LJK in Nam says, thank you so much for the interview with Jimmy Wales. It's about building community. Trust is so important for society, and Wikipedia, an important part of that. So, Jimmy, you have described yourself as an optimist. You have this really human approach to the internet, but we have to talk about the non-human elements of the modern internet now. AI has become such a huge feature of our online lives. How concerned are you about what its arrival means for Wikipedia?
Well, I mean, now that you've sort of psychoanalyzed me a little bit, you probably will guess I'm not worried. I'm like interested. Like, that sounds interesting. So we're, you know, obviously there are things we have to be mindful of. I mean, one of the issues that we're all going to face is very low quality AI slop, as people are calling it, sort of low quality content that's misleading, and whether deliberately being weaponized or whether just it's just low quality and that's what it is. At the same time, you know, when we look at this ability to analyze documents in a completely new and humanish kind of way, the ability to generate texts, I think there are some opportunities for us at Wikipedia not to use it to write Wikipedia entries. The hallucination problem is still really bad. And, you know, when we do see it improving to some extent, but, you know, like when ChatGPT-5 was being touted just before it came out, as if the problem had been solved. And then it came out and everybody's like, well, no, it's still a bit bonkers, you know, like it still gets a lot wrong, particularly on more obscure topics. At the same time, like, you know, it's pretty good at summarizing text. I wrote a little script, just being a geek, you know, you can feed it a short entry and the five sources, if there's five sources, say, and ask it, are there any facts in the sources that should be in Wikipedia but aren't? Or is there anything in Wikipedia that's not supported by the sources? Give me some suggestions. And it's pretty good. It's not perfect. It doesn't get it all right. And sometimes it makes a suggestion and you're like, that doesn't really fit our style or framework. But other times it's like, oh, okay, like that could be a useful tool to support the work of humans. You know, when we think about things like bias in Wikipedia, well, one of the things, we have a lot of great volunteers who are like, okay, I want to help work on that. Feed me some articles where there are some problems potentially with bias, and maybe the AI could scan over all of Wikipedia and say, oh, this article seems to really take one side of this issue. And, you know, having read the sources and all that, and maybe it'll be wrong sometimes and you're like, no, it's not really. And other times it might be, oh, okay, right. Actually, here's an article I can work on. And so I'm excited about that possibility of, you know, figuring out ways to leverage the technology to support our very, very human community.
Would you ever see a situation where Wikipedia would work with an AI company to use Wikipedia content for training?
Well, they do already. I mean, all the major AIs are heavily trained on Wikipedia. It's all freely licensed, so everybody can take the content and do what they like. We are trying to encourage these companies to stop hammering our servers by crawling us so heavily all the time, and instead, you know, pay us for a feed. Like, that's actually, you know, would be very helpful. And, you know, we're getting response. Google's a great customer for that. You know, they recognize it's a better product for them. And it's like not nice to just hammer our servers without paying us some money. So that's all working very well. And, you know, in general, I think we're very interested in what's going on in the open source world as well. So it isn't just these big companies. We're interested in, you know, models that are being released under free licenses and, you know, how the open source community is starting to do some really innovative work around inferencing and training and so forth. So, yeah, it's an exciting time. And I'm, you know, personally, I'm quite obsessed with it all.
You talked before about that sort of optimism of the early internet, and you write in your book that those early days felt like, it really felt like the internet could change the world in a good way. Do you think that there's mm-hmm. a way we could get back to that optimism as a society?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And I think these things tend to go in, you know, it's a pendulum swing. And lately we've been in a bit of a negative mode. I talk about how, you know, when it was in the U.S., when it was Obama versus McCain, I was like really proud of the U.S. I was like, you know what? I have agreements and disagreements with each of them, but they're both proper people. They're both sensible. You know, they're both willing to work together with politicians who they disagree with and so on and so forth. That's functional politics. Like, that's actually great. Since then, not so much, right? And since then, obviously, things have deteriorated. But that will pass. We'll get better leaders at some point. And, you know, yeah.
Just coming back to the book, the process of writing a book can be really illuminating because you're sort of forced to articulate your point of view and reflect on what's happened to you. What has your book writing process helped you with in your own understanding of your own story?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the book is the Seven Rules of Trust, and that putting the concept of trust, which I always felt was, you know, important. I mean, I did know that, but really articulating it made me really understand how much it underlies a huge amount of things in society, you know, and we, the way we live day to day, we actually do trust other people. Like, it's a good bet. Like, it's not pie in the sky. It's like, oh, why do we trust other people? Because generally they're trustworthy. And this is how society functions. If we were as horrible as social media makes us seem sometimes, we would have gone extinct a long, long time ago. But people, you know, they do cooperate, and people are mainly reliable, and they look after each other, and they live up to their word and all that good stuff. And I hadn't really ever stopped to pause to really reflect on how important all that is, how important it is that businesses be trustworthy, that we treat other people as with respect and say, like, oh, I said I would do the thing, so I better do the thing, you know, like, that's really important. And so the process of writing the book was really all about kind of making that more clear to myself and then hopefully clear to the reader.
The book is called The Seven Rules of Trust, but if you had to pick one rule that you hoped that people really kind of took away from it, what is it?
I think it's the rule, it's purpose. The idea that you really need to have a very clear purpose. This particularly applies to organizations and so forth. So for Wikipedia, our purpose is a high quality, neutral encyclopedia. And it really clarifies everything else that we do. And it keeps us from getting distracted with, I don't know, if people say, oh, why don't you do this or do that? And it's like, that's not really an encyclopedia. Let's just keep focused on what we're good at and do that. And I just think that one is really important. And tying purpose to trust is what I think might be a little surprising. It's like, because we have purpose, you can predict what we're going to do. You know, Wikipedia isn't going to sort of cave into censorship in China and start editing Wikipedia to please the Chinese government, because that's not consistent with a high quality encyclopedia. And so that kind of principled approach to life can help other people to trust you and understand where you're coming from.
Jimmy, thank you so much for making time for me today.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's great.
Jimmy Wales is a co-founder of Wikipedia, the author of The Seven Rules of Trust, Why It Is Today's Most Essential Superpower.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.